Welcome to another episode of Learn Buddhism. I'm Alan Pito. I'm excited to introduce to you the most famous and popular bodhisattva in all of Buddhism. That is Avalokiteshvara. Avalokiteshvara is so popular that the vast majority of Buddhists know who this bodhisattva is. They revere them, they chant, recite to them, we have offerings, everything, because this bodhisattva really is, for those in the Mahayana branch of Buddhism, the ideal of what they are also trying to achieve. Because bodhisattvas are so filled with compassion for other sentient beings and want to help freedom from the suffering of samsara, this endless cycle of birth and death, rebirth, that is filled with unsatisfactoriness and suffering, that we see in this bodhisattva everything that we would expect a bodhisattva to be. Because even their name, Avalokiteshvara, if we break it down, it is one who looks down onto the world and hears the cries of the sentient beings in the world, their suffering, their unsatisfactoriness, their need for help, and goes to help. And that, for laypersons and monastics alike, is not only very appealing, it's also very reassuring. You have this bodhisattva who is there for you, and is there for you not just to make your life better, but to get you on that right path in Buddhism for that ultimate liberation, which is become a bodhisattva and eventually a Buddha, because we want to realize nirvana, our true natural state. How we're living right now is not our natural state, and is really the cause of like all this conditions that we're in, that sometimes we may observe, sometimes we may not observe. And this bodhisattva is one to help us get us there. So this is why you see all these prayers and cries and respect and recitations to this bodhisattva, because they hear it. They hear it, and they're there to help us, even if we don't see that help. Now, for a lot of you, this may be, okay, wait, are they kind of like an angel or something? No, bodhisattvas are not like angels that we have in maybe Christianity, for example. That's not the same thing. A bodhisattva is an enlightened being that helps other sentient beings. Most popular, we see them where they help you with the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha, and essentially Buddhism in general, to get us to the right path, to get us down that path. And so when we see this bodhisattva interact with others, it's in many different ways, in ways that will help that sentient being, and I'll talk about that today. But ultimately, their true motivation, their true thing that they're trying to do is to help us understand what we may refer to as Buddhism, so that you can eventually realize nirvana. We want to get you there. And that takes on many different forms. And we see that even with physicians, you know, in the medical field, right? There's many things that they will do to help you. And the medical in general, there's many things that we do that may not appear to really help in one particular way, but it will help in a particular way as part of a holistic treatment, for example. So a bodhisattva is going to help in many, many different ways. And in the Mahayana branch of Buddhism, because Mahayana is the Mahayana path, which is the path of the bodhisattva, you see more and more bodhisattvas here than you would see inside Theravada. And because all Mahayanas, the goal of this branch of Buddhism is to become a bodhisattva, and you know, we start off as unenlightened bodhisattvas inside the Mahayana branch, and hopefully eventually become enlightened bodhisattvas, and then eventually become a Buddha, which is the supreme full awakening. And in Mahayana branch, it's the only true complete awakening to be liberated. We see that bodhisattvas appear in many different ways, with many different skills. And this is always very intriguing to me, because you see these different bodhisattvas have a lot of times what we call skillful means and different ways they interact and talk with people and help people essentially understand the Dharma. And for, you know, sentient beings, this is needed. You know, even in the time of the Buddha, not everybody understood him either, right? And so, of course, a lot did, but a lot didn't. And he taught in many, many different ways as a Buddha, but yet some people just were closed off to that. Now, bodhisattvas, their skillful means here, not saying a Buddha doesn't have this, but a bodhisattva is working in a different way. They're sort of like these foot soldiers. They're out there working in many, many, many different ways to help sentient beings where they're at. So their skills, that thing that makes them a particular bodhisattva is what's needed for that particular person. Now, this bodhisattva, very interesting, because they change. And their underlying who they are as a bodhisattva is this, essentially the bodhisattva of compassion. This is what Avalokiteshvara is. They are able to change and help other sentient beings in many, many different ways. And really, this bodhisattva is skillful means as well. So we can see this bodhisattva in very early on in ancient India, they were depicted as a male figure. And we see them as a male, a man. And then we see later, for example, in China, in East Asian Buddhism, we see they become a female and commonly called, for example, Guan Yin in China. We see Kanon in Japan, for example. But we see that there's different names for this bodhisattva, but this feminine, female figure of this bodhisattva became very, very popular. There's a whole backstory to that as well, but we can see this bodhisattva changes to what's going to be appealing and thus helpful to understand them and what they're trying to do and to help others. And we can see, of course, as I mentioned, like with Guan Yin, very extremely popular, and it was a very skillful way to help others. We also see, for example, and I'm sure you've seen imagery of this figure that has almost like 1,000 arms. I'm sure you've seen probably a picture or illustration of this. That's Avalokiteshvara as well. And there's a whole backstory there where this bodhisattva was just so distraught. You know, there's so many sentient beings that were suffering, and it just didn't feel like, you know, this bodhisattva could help them all, and was about to give up. And this is where we see the most popular Buddha in Mahayana branch, which is going to be Amitabha Buddha, or the Buddha of the Western Pure Land, comes and helps this bodhisattva. And this is like their first interaction. Basically, Avalokiteshvara is the basically right-hand bodhisattva attendant to Amitabha Buddha. So we see that this Buddha has this bodhisattva as one of their primary helpers, but comes to them almost like as their guru or their teacher, right? Says, look, you know, you're essentially, you're going to be okay. You know, I know you're very distraught right now, but yes, you know, you can help other sentient beings. You are on the right path, and is able to basically sort of like rebuild them. And very, very interesting imagery here and story, right? And this is where you see where there's like 1,000 arms and all these different arms. If you look at the hands, they got different things that they're holding, right? And really, this is very much a visual, in my opinion, a very visual imagery of what this bodhisattva can do. They're able to help sentient beings due to their great compassion in any way that is helpful to that sentient being. And this is a very vivid visual way that you're seeing that expressed. We also see that, you know, they're able to see different things, and there's all these different imageries of this bodhisattva to really showcase what they're capable of. And if you really just take a step back and maybe you go, well, I don't really believe they had 1,000 arms or something like that, that's okay. If you just look at what they're capable of, that's impressive. This is a very powerful bodhisattva built out of compassion. So their power is compassion. And that is what drives them. That's what they do, is compassion, 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 and wisdom. So this bodhisattva helps sentient beings as they need to be helped in a way, in a form that is conducive to that help wherever they are. And again, you know, I mentioned a few times that this is why this bodhisattva is so popular. It comes to sentient beings how they need them to come to them, with a way that helps them in a way that they can accept and adopt and understand. And that's very, very hard. Very much like a teacher that can explain a very complicated concept to anybody at any level, very much like Avalokiteshvara. And so when we look at this bodhisattva and what they went through, that's where they're at right now. This is after Amitabha Buddha is the one who kind of like, you know, rebuilt them, you know, built them back up as their guru, their teacher, and went back out into the world, right? And this is why we see that they're so devoted to Amitabha Buddha as well, because they are helping them bring people to the Western Pure Land, the most conducive Pure Land, according to Mahayana Buddhism, especially the Pure Land traditions that follow that, that this is where you're more able to become a bodhisattva and thus a Buddha. So they're helping bring sentient beings to this Pure Land. So their work is multifaceted, to say the least, and they're working in many, many different ways to actually do that. So how do we get here? Like, where did Avalokiteshvara come from? Now, when we talk about bodhisattvas in general, if we look at both branches of Buddhism, Theravada and Mahayana, both recognize bodhisattvas, just different ways they recognize that. Overall, for both branches, they both recognize Buddha Shakyamuni or Gautama, the Buddha of our current era right now, the ones whose teachings we are following, was a bodhisattva on that bodhisattva path through countless lifetimes. They made a commitment, a vow before the prior Buddha, and this is where they ended up, right? So like their last rebirth was actually in a heavenly realm of rebirths, and this is where bodhisattvas go before they come back to the human realm to become a Buddha. This is where, you know, Shakyamuni Gautama Buddha was before he came back as Siddhartha Gautama. And so this is something that's really important, because both branches of Buddhism recognize that, you know, there's exceptional beings that are going to be on this bodhisattva path to become a Buddha. Now, where it kind of differs here is that in the Mahayana branch, becoming a Buddha is the goal of all the practitioners, no matter if you're a layperson or monastic, and all can achieve that, whether a monastic or a layperson. And very much differs from Theravada, where you basically do have laypersons and monastics, but monastics are more able to become enlightened, becoming arhats, not necessarily bodhisattvas or Buddhas. Not saying it's impossible, but that's, you know, really the core of it. And then you have laypersons where they're basically hoping for a better rebirth, where they may become a monastic and become an arhat. So it's really a little different way of viewing it. I'm very much high leveling it here, of course. It doesn't mean that laypersons can't become enlightened, but we're very much, you know, consumed with householder life. Where you see in the Mahayana branch, we're all unenlightened bodhisattvas, and we're on this path where, you know, for a lot of us, take the bodhisattva vows, and we're, you know, we know it's going to take a long, long time, multiple rebirths, we can create this vow now, start working on its wholesome karma, etc., and we're working towards that path, very similar to Shakyamuni Gautama Buddha. And that's really important, because we have many, you know, kind of mentioned many different bodhisattvas inside Mahayana Buddhism that help us understand what to do as unenlightened bodhisattvas, because we want to show and demonstrate and practice the right conditions, the right wholesome karma and actions that we need to do as bodhisattvas, whether we're unenlightened or enlightened. And we can see this even inside Theravada branch, where we look at the past life tales of the Buddha. Those are where he was a bodhisattva many times, an enlightened bodhisattva. But we see where he's done many different things, and they're really stories on ethics and morality and conduct, which are central to a bodhisattva as well. So we're in both branches of Buddhism, we're learning the bodhisattva path. But in the Mahayana branch, we got these bodhisattvas that we can call upon, but also understand how they work. As I mentioned, Avalokiteshvara, very, very popular because of who they are and what they actually are, this bodhisattva of like basically endless compassion. And that kind of takes us to where this bodhisattva came from. Well, the Mahayana branch of Buddhism had its origins in ancient India. And when we talk about ancient India, this, you know, this region, if you will, even stretched up into modern day Afghanistan and Pakistan and all, very large, where Buddhism actually flourished back in the day. And this is where we see the beginnings of Mahayana Buddhism came to be. And sometimes it's thought of like, oh, it's kind of like was created maybe in China or something like that, but it was in ancient India. We look at things in the written form as like where that's where it started. And for a lot, like all the Pali Canon and Theravada, this is the earliest, you know, teachings of, you know, Buddhism. it not necessarily that, it's the only remaining fully intact scriptural canon that we have in Buddhism. You know, everything else in the actual mainland, where we have like India and Afghanistan, Pakistan, for example, a lot of that was destroyed. So what we have remaining from that was, you know, during the ancient Indian period of time, moved to China, for example, and these different countries where remnants still remain, but a lot was translated. So they remain, but you're looking for that continuous, well, of course it's the Pali Canon, but it doesn't mean it was the only one back in that region at the time. So where I'm going with that, a lot of things were orally recited for a very long time. And that includes, you know, the teachings of Shakyamuni Gautama Buddha as well. And so also was Mahayana sutras as well. So we had a lot that were orally recited before they were written down. And there were, of course, ones written down that were lost due to all of like Buddhism just being lost, you know, destroyed in fell into disarray inside a region of ancient India. So actually sometimes the earliest, oldest written Buddhist document we have right now is actually a Mahayana Sutra. It's actually not the Pali Canon. That's been the actual original documents are gone, you know, but it's been rewritten, you know, into new forms. So like a new paper, for example, and documentation, but like the actual leaves it was written on are long gone, but the actual one that we have as the oldest in Buddhism, it's actually in the Mahayana branch. It's a Mahayana Sutra. So if we look at it that way, yes, you know, we can definitely find older things, but we see this Bodhisattva appear in the Mahayana Sutras. And this is really important because you see this Bodhisattva in a lot of different places. For example, the very first sutra that we see Avalokiteshvara appear in, and I may not pronounce this exactly right, is a Avatamsaka Sutra. And this one is really old. It actually predates the Lotus Sutra, which is also very popular in Mahayana branch of Buddhism. So this is where we see who they are. It's this Bodhisattva of compassion that hears the cries of the world, especially when people call their name. And this is really kind of like that origin story, if you will, that we first hear about Avalokiteshvara. Now, the other ones that you're going to hear about this Bodhisattva are, of course, the Lotus Sutra. And this one is also very popular inside Mahayana. There's an entire chapter inside the Lotus Sutra devoted to Avalokiteshvara. Okay. And so we see here that, again, is emphasized that the Bodhisattva is full of compassion and responds to our cries, to our suffering, and how those who invoke, chant, recite, say their name will come to help. And that kind of reinforces what we heard in that last sutra. So we're seeing that you can cry out, you know, you can pray, you can recite, you can chant their name, and the Bodhisattva will hear you. And that's very, very reassuring. You have a Dharma teacher, you have a Bodhisattva that is there, that hears you, hears your troubles, and is helping you along that Buddhist path towards the ultimate goal. Then when we look at kind of like the most popular sutra in all of Buddhism, obviously in the Mahayana branch, you know, a very large branch of Buddhism, we see the Heart Sutra. So the Heart Sutra, it's really important because not only is this sutra basically chanted and, you know, read and everything else like almost every day by so many Buddhists, because it's not only is it short, but it's actually very well loved and very profound in what it actually teaches. But what's really interesting about it is you see the central figure here is Avalokiteshvara. And this is where the sutra is helping us understand compassion and wisdom and about emptiness, you know, all these different, you know, Buddhist concepts that are very central inside Mahayana Buddhism. But we see the Bodhisattva there as the central figure. And I like that. So like it's a sutra that's very, very popular. You know, we're not going to get this sutra, you know, first go, you know, and for many it recited for years and it may not understand the deeper meaning. And that's okay. You know, we do things repetitively inside Buddhism, hoping that, you know, we're studying, we're learning, but we have to engage. And then this is helping us in many, many different ways. But we see that even there's this bodhisattva there that was, you know, trying to understand and everything and understood. And that's part of the sutra. So you see that you too can also get to that level because this bodhisattva did. They came from, if you will, where you are, maybe not fully understanding something, to understanding something. So you have a bit of reassurance that it's okay, you know, that we don't know everything. And you can, with constant effort and practice and being able to be open to it. And that is where, you know, again, I like that we have this bodhisattva inside there. So what do we do with this bodhisattva as like a daily practice or just as a practice in general? And this will vary obviously widely based upon different traditions and schools and cultures and countries. So I'll be very broad about this in some places, of course, but it's just almost like a Buddha. You know, we are going to, you know, recite, chant, you know, maybe there's going to be a statue. And what's really interesting here is this bodhisattva is in their story. They are actually a Buddha that decided, you know what, I'm going to go and work as a bodhisattva. And it's something that I really admire and love about this. It's like, they're a Buddha, but they're going to work as a bodhisattva because they felt that is the most effective way to show their compassion and love for others is to work kind of as a bodhisattva. Now, it doesn't mean that a Buddha can't, you know, do those things as well. It's just this bodhisattva felt as a Buddha, like, I'm going to become, work as a bodhisattva and work this way. And that's okay. And I think that's really something that I also really like about this bodhisattva. It's like, you know what, I'm just going to keep working in many, many different ways. As a bodhisattva, I can do this. Whereas a Buddha, maybe I have to do this specifically. You know, here I'm a little bit more freer, if you will, to kind of be more broad in my work. And I like that. So you can have a statue of Avalokiteshvara, maybe called Guanyin in China, for example, or Kanon in Japan, for example. You know, you can have a statue, you can use that on your altar, for example. You've heard different chanting and reciting of their name. And probably the mantra you probably have heard the most is Om Mani Padme Hum. You know, that's really talking about Avalokiteshvara right there. So that's a very popular one, more from the, you know, Tibetan, you know, version. But you're going to find, for example, in other countries, different ways that you do it. For example, as you know, I practice, you know, Chinese Buddhism. And the way you do that is Namo Guan Shi Yin Pusa. And so Pusa is Bodhisattva. And so we are basically chanting, reciting their name. As you kind of learn from those sutras, you are reciting their name so that they hear you, right? And there's power to that. And one part of that is, yes, we are reciting, chanting to this bodhisattva, and there's a connection there, right? But also, if you want to take that out for a second and just look at what's happening to you, this is really important. You know, you, whether you believe you're talking to a bodhisattva or not, and that's an important part, but what's also happening, you are at this time paying attention to your words. You're paying attention to the syllables. You're paying attention to the tone that you're doing. You're visualizing the bodhisattva as well. And I've mentioned this before, you know, even if, like, for example, you want to envision the Western Pure Land of Amitabha Buddha, you know, there is this physical component, there's this real component, but there's also going to be what you're doing right here, right now, that can help your mind. So when I look at a Buddha, you know, I visualize a Buddha or a bodhisattva, I'm visualizing a wholesome being. I'm visualizing an enlightened being, one that understands the Dharma, one that acts in a way that I also want to act and to get to as well. If I look at, for example, Western Pure Land, I'm looking at a perfected place that helps others on that path, understanding the Dharma, becoming bodhisattvas and Buddhas, for example, right? So when you have this visualization, it's really important because we're trying to, as everyday sentient beings, as laypersons, transform our karma. We're trying to, you know, be more wholesome. We're trying to practice five precepts. We're trying to, you know, for us in Mahayana, beyond the Mahayana branch, we're trying to do these things, right? So when we have visuals, when we are able to engage, we're, you know, I don't have in front of me Shakyamuni Buddha, Gautama Buddha. They're not physically in front of me like I could have been 2,600 years ago. I'm going to have to recreate that somehow. And this is what you see Buddhists do. So same goes with a bodhisattva. So chanting, reciting their name, you know, the visualization, all very, very important. And I also like where, you know, this connection that we have, whether it's with a Buddha or bodhisattva, there's a connection being done, right? These are your teachers. Bodhisattvas are teachers as well. When you are chanting, reciting their name, this repetition, do it mindfully. You're not just rushing through it. You're being mindful of it. So, you know, traveling, you know, a lot of Buddhists or even just when they're out, they'll have like these little cards of the Bodhisattva, you know, of Avalokiteshvara, Guanyin, and they'll have that with them. So you can always see this Bodhisattva, have them with you. And there's this many, many different ways. You don't want to be away from this Bodhisattva because they're there to help you, right? And having them with you, having that visual is a very good thing. So of course you can give offerings, for example, at an altar. You can do, for example, if you chant, recite the Heart Sutra, you're obviously chanting their name, but you're also understanding, you're also getting taught something as well. So you're getting instruction and you're getting teaching, but you're also chanting your name. So many, many, many different ways that this can actually happen. But this Bodhisattva was so popular and for great reasons. You know, it is the embodiment of compassion in Buddhism, especially as expounded inside Mahayana branch of Buddhism. Helps us understand, you know, for example, in the Heart Sutra about emptiness, it helps, hears our cries, and is able to engage with us in ways that will help us. And as I mentioned before, I like that because a lot of times, like when we engage with other people, especially as Buddhists, you know, we want to help other people, of course. We engage in a way we think, you know, we should engage. Here's a Bodhisattva that's understanding the people that they're engaging with and how to engage in that way. Now, we may not be that skillful, but we can definitely, you know, look at that and go, is there a better way I can say this? Is there a better way I can help this person? Not about what's for me, but what may be best for them. And, you know, maybe as a friend, family member, coworker, you know, spouse, whatever, you know, how can we engage with them that connects with them, that helps them in a way that they understand? So I hope you enjoyed this brief introduction to Avalokiteshvara, called Guanyin in China, for example. Very popular. If you are interested in starting a practice with Avalokiteshvara, definitely take a look. Maybe inside your school tradition of Buddhism, they're already doing this. You may not even have noticed that before, but you know, ask like, hey, you know, is there a particular practice we do, or how do I do that? They may give you, for example, a little book or type of liturgy that you could use, for example. There's often, for example, on Avalokiteshvara's birthday, there's usually a whole, you know, ceremony and actions we take, for example. So it's not like this is just like a daily practice. There's other things we do as well with this Bodhisattva, but definitely engage that way. And of course, on the internet, you can definitely find, you know, probably ebooks and stuff like that, all devoted to this Bodhisattva. So let me know what you think about this Bodhisattva. I'm curious to know if you actually have heard of this Bodhisattva before, and if you're even practicing, you know, so this may be one that you as a Western Buddhist didn't hear about or didn't even know you could practice with. And maybe now this is something that you want to do, that you like this, you know, this Bodhisattva interests me. And obviously in our world, you know, there's all these different challenges, and this is one I want to kind of connect with. So I definitely love to hear back from you, and I will talk with you in our next episode. Thank you.